Bear.
Ah, you dickheads.
Welcome to episode 21 of Double Dodge. This one's called Agent Orange. How are you, Cam?
I'm fantastic. It's been a good one. I'm excited about our nationals coming up, but I was also pretty excited to chat to JJ.
Indeed. So we had a nice chat with JJ Layfield, the winner of British Nats 2017. What did we talk about? We talked about the Viet Cong.
We talked about
immigration. We talked about, you know, what to do when you find yourself hopping from city to city without, you know, without a clean pair of underwear. It was quite wide-ranging. Yeah.
I think what we did discover was that basically Gilball is just luck. It all comes down to luck at the end, and essentially you just need to roll better. That's pretty much the moral to the whole episode.
I mean, that's just good advice to live by, really.
Mm.
Yeah.
Roll better. Roll often.
Roll more dice. Don't have bad luck.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
don't be shit. Get good.
We don't have any carball this week, do we? No carball.
No.
No slugfuck. No, slugfuck. No. Slugfuck has not been well received.
It's done well. I'm not sure if our listenership has dropped off. But the echo and crickets chirping I've heard on the interwebs has indicated, it hasn't been as well received. We probably will get back on the carball action, because it's always good to, you know, chat through a matchup and the thought process going in and out of a game, even if it's a casual one at your local club. But maybe our ridiculous slugfuck matchups might need to be curbed slightly.
Indeed, yeah, dustbin of history, all of that. We should probably give a big shout out to young Matty Graham and Canberra in general, because Australian Nats is this weekend.
Absolutely.
That's pretty exciting, man.
It is. We've got somewhere around 30-odd players. It's going to be awesome. We get to catch up with a whole bunch of guys that we've played against a few times. We've met online. It's going to be awesome. Shout out to Matty for really pulling his finger out and making sure he's bloody good at organising it. He organised CanCon. He's doing it this weekend. There will be a stream. We might post it through our socials as to what the stream is, but it's the 3D6 Twitch stream, and Matty will be commentating that. We've also promised that, loosely promised, if we're not kind of top tabling it and we scrub out, which I'm probably expecting, we'll help him out on the stream and, bit of sledging, bit of fun, and do a bit of commentary.
Indeed. I can't hardly wait, because I love a weekend away and I love beer, and I feel like those two things are going to come together. It's going to be glorious.
It's going to be lots of beer, lots of good ball.
Yep. So why don't we jump into this chat with JJ, talk to him about Nats, and then we'll come back on the other side to say goodbye.
Let's do it.
All right, we have all the way from the past, deepest, darkest Britain, the winner of British Nats 2017, JJ Layfield. How are you?
Good, mate. Good. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. We also have Campbell on the line. Campbell?
Yeah. I'm here. Sorry, I just had to finish tea and quickly rush into this. So I'm ready for this. Let's go.
Excellent. Well, JJ, before we discuss your glory in too much depth, we like to ask our guests three questions. The first question we have for you is, what have you got to say to the Brits, given that you've taken away their national championship from them?
Steve Easton needs to learn how to play better.
No. Well, he's not going to like that.
No, he's not. Oh. Whatever.
Yeah.
I spoke to Beeston the other day. He was. I think he's still a little bit sad.
Oh, mate, you should have seen him. After he lost that match round four, the salt was just fucking brutal.
Yeah.
Steve's a great guy. Like, we're really good mates, and we play a lot against each other and discuss a lot of things. But, he does not like to lose when he thinks he should be winning.
Mm.
He's happy with, you know, if someone beats him fair and square, he's all right. But when he doesn't think he should have lost, which, watching that video back, he probably shouldn't have, whatever.
Yeah.
Can I make a comment there and just say, Beeston, next time, O'Hearn, is legit. Yeah. Right. That's all I'm going to say there. Right? This is what happens when you take a guild and you've only played them a couple of times. Okay? You know? So, yeah.
I think he's beating himself up badly enough, you know. This is like kicking a man when he's down, but fair enough.
Okay.
Fair enough.
Edit that out.
He'd probably do it to us.
As soon as I won, the first thing he said, if it was against me, you would have lost. And I was like, good, man, good. Good thing you weren't there.
Fucking nasty. Now, the astute listener may have noticed that you are not, in fact, British. And
Well, technically I am, but anyway.
Oh, right, you're a citizen, are you?
Yeah, I was actually born here, but grew up in Australia. Excellent. So, can kind of straddle both sides of that one as I see fit with Brexit and everything. It's good.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant.
Well, that leads me to my second question. What is your strangest experience as an expat? What's the weirdest thing that's happened to you in Britain?
The weirdest thing? Mm. That's a really good question. I mean, it was my first weekend here. I ran into a guy in Borough Market, which is like super ram generally, and it was, you know, huge place just near London Bridge, Tower Bridge, not London Bridge. I know where I'm going. And I ran into a guy that grew up around the corner from me, like literally four houses down from me in Perth, and I ran into him in like a crowd of 10,000 plus people on my first weekend in London, which just shouldn't happen. So that was pretty random, but I don't know. Weirdest thing? What constitutes weird?
Whatever.
Sorry,
you
I'm gonna get like, philosophical on it, right?
Like, yeah, it's you know, did you? I don't know. It's kind of an open-ended question, designed to prompt conversation and make you feel relaxed as a guest, so that our subsequent conversation is less stilted and awkward. But
so when you start to probe, then it doesn't hurt so much,
that's
right?
That's pretty much right. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Good.
I think we've lubricated the conversation. It's good.
Yeah.
Good.
Which brings me to question number three. Have you got anything you'd like to say to Alex Potts?
Mate, you know what? I have actually never listened to their podcast, right? Because generally, I think that the Americans have a pretty trashy version of what the meta actually looks like from what I've heard and what the internet tells me.
Wow.
So what would I like to say to Alex Potts? I hope that he can actually back up what he says and that his view on the meta is actually reflective of a worldview and not some little sheltered pond view that he's got over there.
Fighting words, JJ.
You'll have a chance to back this up, won't you? Are you on the WTC side for Britain?
Yeah, I am. I am.
And I believe Alex is representing the US, so we might just have to have a round two on this conversation and see what happens later on.
We'll have to have a friendly match, in the lead-up to it at least, right? Like, give it a batch. I'm not even sure he knows who I am, to be totally honest, so it's okay.
He probably doesn't. But like you say, you know, the United States is retreating from world affairs. They're effectively Japan, you know, pre-Meiji Restoration. It's I don't think it's our fault, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, yeah. No, fair enough. But I think it's interesting the things I hear that come out of, you know, the American podcasts and their view on the game.
Mm.
Because anyone that says Harry is rubbish is clearly wrong. I don't even think that needs to be backed up with anything.
Wow.
But anyway.
Man, they thought Australians were bad before. I don't know. What, I mean, you're apparently a Brit, so maybe that gives us a bit of leeway, but I think we're fucked.
Mm. Look, I used to play with Dan all the time, right? So this is making an extension of his influence and blame it on him.
Terrible influence. Terrible. Well, thank you for playing the quickfire question round. That was fun. British Nats. First of all, well done, mate. That's a great outcome. Congratulations.
Cheers, mate. Appreciate it.
Mm. Big weekend. What was it? Six rounds in the end. Six round tournament.
Yeah, six rounds.
Yeah, not a small one. And engineers, why?
So I guess since season three, so I was at SteamCon last year and decided there that I was going to give, before that I was playing Fish, mainly Corsair because it was still sort of the single, well, it was two captain, but Shark was a bit boring. So playing mainly Corsair. Switched over to engineers as soon as I lost both semifinals for the last chance qualifiers for Worlds and just went, stuff it, engineers it is. Let's just dedicate my time to this for the next sort of 12 months and see what happens. And I really liked the changes to the engineers. I like the changes to Hoist and to Ballista especially, and thought, right, let's just make this work. Give it a bash. They've got a really strong attacking game on goal threat, marginal on being able to take things out, but doesn't really matter. And a really strong control element, I think, if you can get the play right. So it was a pretty conscious decision to just focus on one guild rather than jump about and do it for at least 12 months.
As a footballing side, they don't seem to have lost anything due to the errata. Alchemist dialed back, you had Fish dialed back, but Engineers were like right in there where they always were.
Exactly, and I think that was one of the big things. I mean, one of the big reasons for Engineers and the focus, because I took them to Vengeance here as well, and did pretty well there, so not going to complain. And one of the reasons for taking Engineers to that was access to the double goalie to try and shut down, because Shark was pre-errata, just ridiculous, Midas, ridiculous. And being able to put down, like, a counter charge and then two influence and you need fives to score from way out means that you kind of really limit their effectiveness, or at least they have to risk a lot more. So you could just go that control game. And so when the errata came out and it kind of hit Midas and Shark, which is what the engineers were already good at controlling, it made them better at controlling that. And they were still, despite having that ability to control it, those were two really bad matchups because, you know, if you're going back goal for goal, essentially, you know, Fish and Midas are just going to do that better than you, unless you can really get velocity in a really strong place. So it's just almost not worth going for the trade. So I just, as soon as the errata came out, those two got dialed back. I went, well, I haven't actually been hit by this at all. Not a single model has changed. And they've lost both sides. Well, the effectiveness on Osirin, right down. Shark still does what he does, but does not impact me as much anymore, so that's fine. Midas now can no longer shoot from 10 inches. Happy with that scenario. Stuff it, let's just give it a go. Made them more powerful, I think.
You did mention earlier that no change, and also Harry. Harry got dialed back a bit. Do you play him much, or is it and this is what I found with the way I play Alchemists, he's been dialed back, but not in the areas I actually used him in anyway. Is that how you kind of view him? Yeah.
Exactly. The toolbox is still there. I mean, people are like, oh, he can't do damage anymore. I'm like, when the hell was he doing damage? I mean, Harry gets stuck into combat and he dies. 3-1, Rising Anger, and then he just disappears in a mist of nothingness. And
well, he's already killed himself. So, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So it makes marginal sense. And It was just a bit of a strange reaction, I think. If anything, he got better on the counterattack, which is where I was using him anyway, because you didn't have to go crazy first. So you're more likely to hit those pushes. And then after that, he still had Goad, he still had Molotov, and I was just like, and he still had Rising Anger. I was like, well, I feel like I've just kind of gained attack for everything I was using him for, and therefore he's better in any given scenario that I've ever used him for anyway.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I was playing Harry in a Union team, and I think in that scenario you did want him as a beater, and then the toolbox was just, you know, the sweetness on top. But I think your reasoning stands up to scrutiny. So what was your 10 for the tournament?
So I took Ballista, Pinvice, Mother, Ratchet, Hoist, because Hoist is just ridiculous. Velocity and Vet Velocity, Compound, Colossus, and Harry.
Right. No Mainspring?
No.
Do the engineers have two mascots?
No.
I tried Mainspring for a really long time, just to see if there was some weird tech that I was missing. And especially when I first switched over, because I was like, let's give it a shot. Long Bomb, like, he's not a bad goalkeeper. Essentially, like, you can keep him deep, and if you recover the ball, he can just hold onto it, sit deep, and then make an 8-inch sprint and do a 10-inch uninterceptable pass for free. Which is, you know, if you want to play a takeout game, fine. But if you're playing a takeout game with engineers, you're probably playing the game wrong. So
you're doing it wrong. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think the secret tech with him is just blowing him up in everyone's face. Like, that's about as good as it gets, isn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, that was fine in season one.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, I mean, you basically got to shoot him down with a couple of blast earths. So yeah, that's pretty much how you got to take him out these days.
Exactly. So I don't know.
Yeah, it's not ideal. It's not ideal, Tech.
And Mother's just so good. I mean,
yeah.
When the Errata came out, I was surprised they didn't change webbing, because yes. It's such a dumb rule. I mean, being able to pick the ball up, like drop it in a corner next to a marker, exactly, and have Mother in tap in range, be like, I'm going to score now. Okay.
Yeah.
That needs to change, I think.
But I agree. I mean, it's probably one rule that doesn't actually have a distance kind of requirement. And so, it enables these crazy plays from, you know, across the field where you can just kill the ball on one side of the pitch and then, Mother taps it in. And if the astute player isn't actually keeping an eye on Mother, you just sneak up and get a tap-in shot. It's so good.
Yeah, exactly. And, I feel like webbing should be like the nest marker needs to be within 6 inches of you or something, you know, just to make it a little bit more viable as a rule, because at the moment it's way too good.
Yeah, agreed. That's a pretty strong lineup you're taking in. I've played a little bit of NGs, but probably not nearly as much as you. But that all sounds very tidy.
And you have you tend towards Ballista over Pinbice, is that right?
Well, I don't know. So Vengeance, which was about a couple of months ago, I took the same 10, basically, and only lost one game at that, and that was the eventual winner. Again, Midas, because he's a jerk.
Right. So you lost to James Long, is that right?
Yeah, James Long in round 4. Yeah. Right. So took the same lineup. I don't know. I'm just trying to think what the original question was.
Ballista over Pinvice.
Oh, right. Yes, sure. So I think you take Pinvice into a lot of matchups, and so you need to, and especially things where you need the defense, basically. And additional close control models, so the football-based teams and fillet, those sorts of things. But this Nats was really strange. So at Vengeance, the guild split was very heavily tilted towards Fish, Alchemists, and Engineers. I mean, 128 players, there was something like 18 Engineer players. It was ridiculous. You never sort of saw that many ever before. And more Fish and more Alchemists. And that's a bit insane. So I was expecting that Fish and Alchemists would drop off going into Nats, and I thought Engineers would stay pretty high on the percentage, but it actually ended up being like 12 Butchers players and a lot of Hunters and a lot of Union, which is Union's to be expected. But everything I got drawn into just went better with Ballista. Mm. There was a couple of surprises that I was not expecting. So the Masons game I had in round 5, I was, if I was Masons and I'm playing into Engineers, I feel like you have to put down Honor. Because Hammer is, while he's good because he stops all the pushes and everything, if he gets even slightly overextended, he's in a lot of trouble. And then the Engineers can just control out the rest of the team to make sure Hammer stays overextended. And then you just isolate him and kill him, and there's not a lot he can do. So when he dropped... Because if Hammer's going down, I'd much rather have Pinvice on the board.
Mm.
Because you just deletion, tool up some stuff, and just wreck everything in the back line to make sure he's got no support from within the 4 to be able to use any of his abilities. So like turn 1, you just basically pepper damage on everyone and then just send Pinvice in to dodge and kill like 3 models simultaneously and then just go, what are you going to do about it? But to me, he should have been playing Honor the whole time, which is why I put down Ballista. So Ballista into Hammer is okay, but not amazing. But in that matchup, I would have preferred Pinvice. It really is matchup dependent, but looking at the teams I played against, Ballista had to go down. It was just to basically control out different aspects.
Do you find with the OP and how it works with the captains that, I mean, that sounds like there was a bit of a list chicken going on there. Did you find any other situations that you had where, you thought the opponent would pick something different or that the list chicken had bearing on the outcome?
Yeah, so the interesting one, and I spoke about this with Timmy from Germany a little while ago, at Vengeance, when he was running Engineers there. Because a lot of the German meta sort of went for solo captain, only taking pin bites. And because they were like, Ballista doesn't have a place, like you can, pin vice can just do everything that Ballista can do and can do a lot of it better. And I was, well, I disagreed with that. But the obvious, like I've had two games against engineers at Nats, one against Jay Clare, and the other one against a guy called Thomas Sims, who was like the top ranked engineer player or something, I think at the time. And most people think that as soon as you're going into engineers, the best thing to do is to go for the ultimate ball control style thing and the high def. So you want to take pin vice over ballista, force the close control, do all the rest of it. But pin vice into pin vice is just the worst matchup ever. It's super boring. And one, like if you both got deletion and tooled up, your reanimate just means nothing because one result kills the reanimate trigger. You just end up achieving absolutely nothing. Whereas if you've got ballista into pin vice, you can stop pin vice being able to basically ramp up to the point where she can even kill ballista. So I was playing the list chicken thing with both of those games where I was like, I'm pretty sure they were going to put down pin vice because everyone's opinion is that you take pin vice into engineers. But I've found ballista is definitely the better choice because if they're putting down pin vice, you want to have ballista. And if they're putting down ballista, you don't want to be putting down pin vice. So I don't know.
Maybe the right choice though.
But I mean, I feel like I'm the only person that holds that opinion. So we'll see what happens.
Well, I mean, you've got some latitude to pretty much throw your opinion around for at least however long you keep winning.
Right.
Just don't scrub out at Worlds. You'll be fine, mate.
Yeah, exactly. No pressure.
No. You want to walk us through some of your games? Like any moments from the games that you played that jump out, sort of stick with you?
I think they said this on stream as well. I've watched a couple of the stream games back, but it was especially after about round three onwards, the games got pretty competitive. Like everyone was going, all right, this is now actually for a plane ticket to America. And it became really cagey. So it was really good, clean play, or at least on my tables anyway. But again, very standoffish. Which I think actually helped me because I was playing I was basically playing the long game, trying to get a couple of quick goals. For turn one, not score too much, cause a lot of issues with Blasted Earth and those sorts of things, and try and score a goal, you know, top of two or something like that. But I think three or four of my games went to time or nearly went to time, and I got a lot of points basically by clocking people and controlling things out, because I think a lot of people, they see engineers, they know you're going to get a couple of quick goals and go on that basis, but then you're going to struggle to get the takeouts. Mm-hmm. unless you've got a soft player to hit. So a lot of people were just killing the ball, which is fine, like 100% fair. So I just started to then retreat and force their longer activations to have little to no effect and play the clock game a bit. And because everyone was playing KG from the get-go, they were spending a lot more time on turn one than you'd normally see, and people weren't really going for those I'm just going to risk doing something random style plays that can really pay off sometimes. So and that plays very well into the engineer's play style, because if you can get someone to clock, and then because you're not engaging, so you've scored a couple, then you retreat, you're just going to blast at Earth from a distance and be a bit of a jerk. They have to then cycle through their activations once they're clocked really quickly, and you just get 6 points.
Yeah.
If you can get 50% of your points by doing nothing, I mean, I'm okay with that scenario.
You're being a jerk at that point. Don't be a jerk.
I mean... little bit, but you know, they're to win, right? So
absolutely. And if they're not keeping an eye on that from the get-go, then yeah, more for them. I mean, it potentially comes down to, you know, it's more about who clocks first as well. Like, you generally want to be on parity as you go through the game and start pushing the other person lower than you, and if they're not keeping an eye on that and you're 10 minutes up, then they need to play faster.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, as soon as they kill the ball, they're now stopping themselves scoring 4 points as well, because they're putting it out of my reach, which means they're not in goal score range. fine with me. Yeah. And if you've got Hoist, Ballista, and a couple of other hard to kill models, like Velocity's not easy to kill, Mother can just disappear whenever she wants to disappear. You don't have a lot of targets then that you can reliably kill to make up the points difference. So if I've scored a couple of times and we're just playing the clock game, I mean, you're up 8-2, 8-4. You just force them to activate them at that point.
Yeah,
absolutely. And even if they come into you, you're at least doing it on your terms where you can take them out or do whatever you want, you know, in the manner that you want to. Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of my games did come down to, you know, managing the sort of clock out. There was a 12-11 game there where I was literally just – we were both on – what were we on? It was – I was down – it was 10 all, and I had one activation, and I won the roll off. 10 all, I won the roll off. I was clocked, he wasn't, and I had Ballista engaging Gutter, and so I deliberately gave him the first activation to see if he could basically get a takeout somewhere, but there was no one he could touch. Absolutely no one he could touch. And Gutter, like Ballista was on full health. Gutter's not going to do all that damage by herself. And wasn't in a position to get away or do anything. So he went for a goal run, but he was like miles short, so it didn't really matter too much. And that put me up to, I was 9-8 down at that point. So I got back to 10 all or something like that, and just activated Ballista with, I was on a minute activation to make 6 attacks on Gutter to take her out. So that was a stressful set of rolls, but I had in the maintenance phase, I got a second dice tray out and I just got 2 piles of 6 dice and I was just rolling them simultaneously and just shouting results.
That's the way to do it.
I just got down to like ultra time management mode. I was just like 2 fistfuls of 6 dice and just rolling dice while someone was watching and just yelling like 2 damage, 2 damage, 1 damage, 3 damage, 1 damage, 2 dead, good game, let's go.
I love it.
But yeah, so
unfortunately that wasn't upside down and back to front on the stream
video. No, I think that would have been a little bit hard to follow. Yeah. That last dice roll on the stream video was a tense one. I'm not gonna lie. That was ridiculous.
Did you have a favorite game out of the ones that you played?
I think my second round game into Jason Fox's Union, which is the one I was just discussing with the Gutter takeout, that was a really, really good game, really solid. Jason's a really good player, and so that was actually quite tense. I'd never played him before either, and I just really enjoyed that game. It was really tight and really clean. They were all really good games. Can't fault any of them at all, but I think that one in terms of just amount of pressure and stress, especially in the last couple of rolls, was pretty high. So good fun.
Mm. Yeah, I see Jason on Twitter from time to time. He seems like quite a nice bloke.
Yeah, really nice guy.
Never met him. He might be a serial killer. I don't know.
He might be, but I've not seen that. So.
But that's the thing about serial killers, mate.
Like, yeah,
you never
that's
know
true,
until
that's
you true. Crack open the underground dungeon.
Well, that's fair, but I mean, if you're going to strike, I would have thought, like, as I was leaving on leaving that Sunday, he could have made a move then, right? I mean, the trophy is pretty hefty.
Sure.
But
like, beat your head in with it, take your face off. Yeah. Now he's the champion.
Exactly. Exactly.
That got dark.
Yeah. Well, if we can leave it there, that's fine.
Yeah.
Stay dark.
For legal purposes, I just want to clarify, we're not calling Jason Fox a serial killer.
No. Jason Fox is a really nice guy. Yeah. Really
it's all nice alleged. Guy. It's all alleged.
Yep.
I quite enjoyed it. I mean, you were on stream twice, weren't you?
Three times.
Shit.
The first round, I was... which was random, was on there, and then rounds 5 and 6. Yeah.
I think once you get on that top table and you hold it, then, well, there you go.
I would have preferred to not be on the stream in round 5, to be totally honest, because obviously at that point there was only four of us left, and having, you know, the stream adds a little bit more pressure, mainly because you know there's other people watching, which is, you know, not is a little bit of pressure. And also because of the sort of scale of the event and what was kind of at stake, I would have much rather, and knowing that the final is definitely going on the stream, mm-hmm. would have much rather had the sort of semi-final not on stream to be able to relax a little bit more to going through it. But, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to feel sorry for you.
yeah, no, understandable. I mean, it's okay.
Now, you played Henry Kay in the final. And his game on stream was amazing. Like, the Union game that he played into... I can't remember his opponent.
Oh, no, he was playing Fraser, playing Masons.
Yeah,
so Fraser actually won... Yes. Fraser's a really good player as well. He won the Irish Nationals.
Yes.
He went over and that, yeah.
Man, that game was deeply enjoyable to watch as well. So, you know, when he made it to the final table, we knew we were going to be in for a treat. You didn't disappoint. Like, it was a friggin' tense game.
Really tense game, yeah.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, did you want to roll us through, you know, kind of how the final played out? And the main reason why I asked that is we were on the stream watching it, but there were definite points when all of a sudden we're like, no, you know, JJ's going to win this. Oh, no, now he's fucked, just based on, you know, a dice roll or something happening. So it'd be interesting to hear it from your point of view in terms of what pivotal kind of points there were and when you thought you had a strong position in the game.
Yeah, so I think I tried to take control. Like, so in the draft and looking at it, Henry's known for playing Vet Rage. So despite the fact he had Blackheart, I knew he was putting Vet Rage down. There was no way he put anything else, because going into that style of game, you're going to go with what you're most comfortable with. Mm-hmm. As soon as you put down Vet Rage, Pinblast is a really bad choice, because Vet Rage just destroys her. So there's very little you can do at that point. So I went with Ballista, not necessarily to damage Vet Rage, but to be able to use the early control to basically put out the Blasted Earths and limit his charge effectiveness, so he wasn't going to get much efficiency out of things, and to then basically go through and just... I couldn't put Harry down because with Usurper, and Harry's clearly the softest target... It's just a bad time for everyone involved. While Goad would be really nice in that matchup, it's also just giving my opponent 2 or 4 points, depending on how many times I want to bring Harry back in a stupid place. So rather than going for the bomb and destroy everything, I thought I've got to play very aggressive on goal here, because he's just going to try and steamroll me. He's just going to unrelentingly walk up the pitch, get in my half and start smashing my face in. So I need to stop the players that I don't want Red Furies, which is why Ballista's kind of handy, what Ballista's handy for, and then put the rough ground down to stop Rage getting the charge lanes he wants, unless he wants to spend momentum to glide and do all these sorts of things. And then I just need to score and score quickly. So I took Ballista, Mother, Hoist, Ratchet, what did I say, Velocity and Compound. And Compound was there to try and stop Mists doing Mist things, to make sure I kind of got a little bit ahead on goals, so he had to go for nothing but takeouts or at least be difficult around that. And Henry was Vet Rage, Strongbox, Benediction, Mist, Gutter, and the surprise one for me was Decimate. When I was in at the lunch break beforehand, I was thinking about what he would take from his 10, and I actually had him down with that last slot being either Hemlock or Harry. And when he pulled Decimate for the last one, it did take me by surprise a little bit. And then when I saw what he did with Decimate in the last couple of turns, I was like, seems like a really good choice. I'm not unimpressed by what you've done here. So it was pretty much set up to be him trying to slog the crap out of me and then score a goal. And followed, you know, essentially with me trying to score as many goals as possible and maybe kill Mist. That was pretty much my game plan going in, was try and kill Mist and then maybe Decimate or Gutter, focus on one of those two, and then score a couple of goals. So the first turn was, I'm trying to remember it very clearly now, but first turn was pretty cagey on my part. I tried to spread out, play wide, and basically stop too much going on, or early turn or early game shenanigans from anyone getting into combat, and pepper some damage around, which went okay. I basically, you know, he kicked out with Mist. I went and got the ball with Mother, and then just retreated to the opposite flank, which was largely to get Benediction out of the game, so that Mist wouldn't be able to get the free dodges. Mm-hmm. And he wouldn't be able to dish out Sturdy so that I could essentially use Ballista a bit more. And then the other thing it did is it kind of exposed Decimate and Gutter on the right flank with not a lot of support from Benediction. And then if Rage got out of position, then those two were completely isolated with no real support from him either to get the extra attacks and set up the Furious Charges and all those sorts of things.
Massively reduced damage output.
Yeah, so that's sort of what I did in that first turn, was go left, grab the ball with Mother, bring her back, and then just send everyone to the right flank to hide behind a bit of rough ground that was there as well. So then the Blasted Earth in conjunction with the rough ground already on the board just meant that it would be very hard for him to have everyone advance on me at once. Especially with the angles and where things would have to come from. I could basically dictate what would be able to make it to my lines and what couldn't, and then if he decided to commit and overextend, that was just gravy for me, basically. So sort of played that, and I was really happy with how the first turn went. I think I landed in a very defensive position, but in a solid position by which I could turn things into something kind of interesting going forwards. I think the really sort of pivotal part of the game, though, I think it was turn two or turn three. Rage was sitting in the middle of the board, hadn't yet hit my lions, and I think this must have been turn two. And I had Hoist sort of sprint out of combat with Decimate or Gutter, whoever was in my lines at that point, taking the parting blow, which, you know, who cares? True repping Burrow. This is after I'd already scored a goal with Velocity. True repping Burrow and turning up on the other side of Benediction on the marker that was there and getting the ball off Benediction and kicking it into space. Mm-hmm. At that point, I had Mother. Mother was engaging Benediction. He's engaged by Benediction, but wasn't engaging him herself. And I had three on Mother, and that was essentially to go and set up a goal run because I could drop the Nest marker, pop out on the other side, already had the momentum from scoring with Velocity, go around to where the free ball was with a sprint and score, which is, you know, great. And that would put me on. That would have put me up to eight at that point. Which was, you know, a happy place for me to be. And Henry basically had a choice at this point. And I'm not convinced what he did was right. I'm not convinced it was wrong either. But I think in terms of how the rest of the game played out, it may have been detrimental. So I essentially having three on Mother was trying to bait Rage to go after her. Because oddly enough, I had Velocity still on the goalpost, basically, who would have been able to go over and reclaim the ball, wouldn't be able to score that turn, but I was getting the goal no matter what. And so if he'd left Mother alive, and so Mother was wide on the left flank and Rage was in the center, and I had, you know, Ballista and Compound sort of, and, you know, everyone was clustered in with Decimate and Gutter. So he either sent Rage into that, which then tipped that whole engagement right in front of my goal in his favor, and he just annihilates Ballista nice and early and Compound, and everything's great. Or he went wide, kills Mother, and stops the goal from there, essentially. And I went, if he goes wide and takes this bait and kills Mother, it's a bit annoying. But simultaneously, Rage is now two turns out of being able to re-engage what he's able to engage this turn. So I've removed Rage from the game for two turns for the cost of one VP and three influence.
Yeah,
that's a pretty massive trade-off that I was quite happy. Like, I was unimpressed that he went for it because I really wanted to score a goal with Mother.
I was unimpressed. I love it.
But
how dare you ruin my goal run with Mother?
Yeah, exactly. Like, what a jerk. but
you're not winning friends on this podcast, although we're pretty good at that as well.
We have no friends left.
Yeah,
they just tolerate us now.
Ben. Yeah, no, that's basically my existence. I was unimpressed because I really wanted to score the goal with Mother. His scoring goals with Mother is always great. But at the same time, pretty happy he did it because the trade-off meant that, as I say, Rage did not make combat where he needed to make combat for two turns, which gave me the time to do the extra bits of damage. And I still got the goal because Velocity just went and got the ball. Mm. So I feel like that was one area where I probably got a little bit lucky in terms of the decisions that were made. And I think at that point it swung in my favor. Then I made a massive screw up because I scored the goal with Velocity, which I should not have done because it basically allowed the ball to come out and sit on mist and be in a position where I couldn't do a lot about it, which then meant as soon as he hit eight, he could just score from wherever he wanted. And then I was out of the game. Like, that was it. Which was, in hindsight, a really dumb thing to do. I should have held the ball on Velocity. There was no one that could get to her. And all I had to do was just put Nimble up and stand on his goalpost and score when I needed to, which was after one more takeout. And then he just had no way to close the game out with any sort of speed. So that was a massive mistake on my part. But I think that was sort of where it got really clutchy towards the end. Because if I hadn't scored that goal and I had the option to score it whenever I wanted and I was sitting on 6 points, then the last sort of sequence where, I mean, when Henry went for the, in the last turn, when he went first, went with Vet Rage, used Decimate through Red Fury to trigger Glut Mass, dodge out of the way, blow Compound up, do all the rest of it to clear the charge lane for Vet Rage to go into Ballista like he did with, you know, legendaries and heroics up and, like, damage out the wazoo. And I'm sitting there on, like, 11 hit points going, I'll be fine. What's the worst that could happen? And he just comes steamrolling through. And oddly enough, we were looking back at the results that he chose. I mean, so he dropped Ballista to 1 HP at that point, which... And I had, which was brutal. And I was looking at it, and I think what I did in that last sequence of attacks with Ballista probably could have been done better in hindsight. But I went for, right, I've got one momentum from going second. I spend that, I heal myself up, go to 5 HP, so that he doesn't just make a counterattack with Gutter and kill me, because that would be the worst way to end that game. and try and do 9 damage in 6 attacks with 5 dice. Mm. Which, in hindsight, was a terrible idea. Like, legitimately a bad idea. I mean, I got... My first roll was terrible because I got no results. So, like, anti-spike. Second roll was great with, you know, all 4 pluses getting the 3 damage, which kind of reined it back a bit. But I just couldn't do more than 1 damage on all the attacks, bar... You know, I guess when if you watch the video back, the last roll, I need to do 3 damage on Gutter, and I've got 5 dice, which means I need to roll 5 4 pluses to win the game, and I did, which was dumb.
Didn't your roll before miss everything again? Like, the one before was terrible. So, I mean, arguably, if you probably looked at all the maths of them all, your dice even out just went up and down, not average, average, average the whole way through.
Yeah, true. True. But I think, I mean, the smarter play for me would have been to spend 2 for the deadbolt and bonus time it with the momentum I had, because then I would have done 3 damage and not got it down, which then there's no counterattack, right? And I get a momentum back from Momentous Inspiration. So then I buy an attack and I bonus time it, and I've got 3s and 1 on success. Then I've got 4 attacks, and I should hit the 2 damage double push every time because I can bonus time every single one. And I've got 4 attacks then to do, 6 damage. The probability is a lot stronger on that path than what I did. So, but it relies on you hitting that first deadbolt. 75% odds. I mean, I'd probably take that every time. So that's probably what I should have done. But simultaneously, we then went a step back and went, well, if Henry had done, rather than doing the damage on the wrap, taking the double concussion result, dropping me to 4 influence, he would have won the game.
Yeah,
that's a fair point.
Yeah, but it was super tense. And like I say, I think it was a really good game. There were definitely points where both of us made mistakes. And I guess that was just like the pressure of the situation we found ourselves in.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. I mean, like when you're in that situation, you're on clock, you're playing for so much. It's hard to keep it all straight.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, oh man, I think better lucky than good, right?
Well, definitely. And I think at the point where, I think that's right though, but I mean, you go to any tournament, I mean, if you're generally playing on top tables,
yeah.
Really, the only thing that it comes down to in the last couple of games is, do you get the right dice rolls at the right time? Because arguably, in terms of positioning and in terms of like the overall strategy, most of the people that are playing at that sort of level are going to make generally the right decision 90% of the time. And sometimes you just need to get lucky.
But this is something Dano said as well. Like, we've had a similar conversation where he's like, yeah, you know, you get to a top table and it sometimes comes down to dice.
And it's a dice game, so you have to expect that. And you obviously, you always try and stack the odds in your favor. You try and do the thing that is going to get you the best possible result the most reliable way. But I mean, let's look at World Champs last year. Timmy just going straight in for a one dice with Obulus and just goes, fuck it, I'm going to score. And you're like, all right, done.
Yep.
Like, so, sometimes, you know, I think it was even I think Jordan said this at a certain point. He goes, you know, if you're playing against someone that is better than you, just try and get lucky. It's going to be the best way to beat them.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, it works, right?
I know there were some commiserations in the Guild Ball Zone Discord server. So big shout out to the Guild Ball Zone Wank Dungeon. Henry was in there post game, and they came to the same conclusion about concussion. You know, that was probably the better result, but you know, like, I can see how you'd probably, you know, the red mist would descend, and you just go in and go for the game winning charge as well. Like, he takes out Ballista, and it's like, good game.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, if he'd got that kill, and I think on the dice, he rolled two ones.
Yeah.
If one of those ones had been a two, he killed Ballista because he got the extra point of damage he needed to take him out. So, and at that point, he went to eight and then missed scores next activation, and there's no way I can do 9 points to gutter with anyone else on the pitch in the position I was in.
Mm.
And there was also no way to reclaim the ball. So I 100% understand why he did what he did. It was basically just shutting the game out. But because then if he didn't do that, he had no other way to do the damage to Ballista, so he'd have to then hold on to the ball and then wait another whole turn, essentially, because there was no one else he could take out, which then gave me an opportunity with Hoist to go and Pester Mist.
Yeah.
And that then, you know, if that ends in a bad position for him, I just score again and it doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it was a great end to the game. I mean, you know, it's kind of what you hope for in these finals matches, where, you know, you have these huge plays and, you know, it resolves everything. I mean, it's quite exciting to watch. We watched all the games on stream, I think, and yeah, that game was a tricky one because when you got Rage into you, thought, oh, okay, here we go. Rage is up the board, Gutter and Decimator engaged, like, surely this is where he steamrolls shit. But, you know, you have a really interesting and slippery style with the Engineers, which, you know, saw you kind of get out of what looked to be, like, a bad situation just by moving you guys around and shifting the ball and pressuring the ball. I mean, is that generally the way that you play them? You know, try and, like, play this pee and shell game where you're constantly using movement to distract your opponent?
I think I've been playing games for a really long time now. And to sort of give you, I mean, every single team I play or every single game I play, I tend to veer towards the more guerrilla style warfare. So it's very much my play style is very positioning based and movement based, rather than let's put the most powerful thing down on the board. So for instance, like I used to play, like, you know, used to take like 40k grand tournaments and stuff. I always played Ravenwing. So, you know, everyone's putting down 100 models. I put down 20 and still, you know, just use movement to dictate ebb and flow. Similarly, like when I was playing Warmer Hordes, I was circling that. Fantasy, when I was that, was like all skirmish wood elves and very much that dance around and, you know, small elite movement based ways of doing things. And that's just kind of how my brain works, I guess, more than anything else.
Right, so you're kind of like the Viet Cong.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, so the moment there's an Agent Orange in Guild Ball, I'm in trouble.
Right. Yeah, nice. Yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, it's hard though, isn't it? When you look at Union and you see Vet Rage on the table and you go, wow, these tools are incredible. You know, like, so much output.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Vet Rage, I rate him. Like, he's amazing. But I've had really close games against Vet Rage and a lot of them. But I've always found you can do a lot to control him out. And I think any model with Furious, you can do a lot to control them out and really focus on preventing them being as efficient as they are. And that's where that movement and positioning comes into it, I think.
That bait play with Mother, I think, that was really interesting. It did seem to be like a turning point for the game. I think if we all said it
on the stream. Yeah.
Yeah, it would have been maybe a different outcome. Because he does want to
play. Oh, yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, exactly. And if I can, and that's, you know, when I was choosing the team for that, I was like, I can't bunch up because I think in my other games on the stream, you probably would have seen me bunching up, trying to get as much momentum as possible from Blasted Earths and Deadbolts, and putting as much damage on as many players as possible. So when they do hit my lines, Ballista then doesn't have to have six on him to take them out, or I can go forward for a breach play, do that, dodge back into my lines with Minefield up, and if they want to come after me, then they're all on one or two hit points, and I just have to get a counterattack and I kill someone, which means then they don't, and then you just Blasted Earth them and kill them anyway. So it's cagey, but it's effective. And then that game, though, as soon as you're bunched up, that allows Vet Rage to do exactly what Vet Rage wants to do. So that's why I went for the let's sand everyone in every direction. and make sure that they can't just crowd that whole scenario out. Yeah.
No, that's brilliant play. You've said Blast Earth quite a few times. Would it be fair to say that you like the double Blast Earth off hoist?
Love the double Blasted Earth off hoist. Mm-hmm. I generally, you know, with Ballista, I try and get three Blasted Earths out in the first turn.
Nice. Love it.
Getting eight damage down on someone nice and early in the game is just really, really just a beautiful thing to have, given the hit point levels of most things in the game. And if you've got, like, if I'm receiving, I'll generally go for eight damage on someone, have Ballista sort of halfway, well, at least advanced up the pitch to go for a top of turn two breach goal. Because kicking from 10 inches away for free is just an amazing thing to do. But if you've got someone that's taken 8 points of damage and isn't in a good counterattack position or is still knocked down from the deadbolt, so they're taking 11 damage, you can just turn around at the beginning of turn two, deadbolt them, essentially.
They're dead.
You get the momentum that you need to take the shot from the takeout, jog up, go minefield up, second wind up. I'm going to take a shot for free and spend this momentum, four dice, knock over a dude knock over the goalkeeper, ignoring him, going, I don't give a crap. And then you're back out like 9 inches when you spend the momentum to dodge back as well. And then you've got minefield up, you've protected your entire team, and you've had a 6-point activation, and Velocity's probably in a position to recover the ball and score again. Mm. It's a good place to be.
Yeah, that's the other thing I noticed when we were watching you play. Like that you can make Ballista an incredibly slippery captain, and it seems counterintuitive when you first look at his playstyle, but the ability to sort of go in, do the damage, score the goal, and then slip all the way back, and then, I guess, set up your own players ready to either retrieve the ball or get, like, a decent takeout on somebody else who comes into you. Really strong. Like, I really rate engineers, particularly post-Errata. I think they got just that little bit much stronger, just purely because of the environment changing.
Yeah, 100% agree with that. Mm.
Yeah, any other guilds that you play on the regular, or are you just sort of a devotee of the engineers?
I've still play a bit of fish. Been toying around with the farmers a bit. And farmers are a lot of fun. So see how that goes. But I kind of dabble across everything, if I'm totally honest. But for tournaments and things like that, I've been sticking to engineers this year anyway. Last year was fish. The year before was masons. So
yep. What's your take on farmers so far? You like them?
Apparently, kicking with Grange is terrible. Internet.
I heard that.
Again, internet wrong. Jesus Christ. Groupthink at its best, you morons.
Oh my god.
Love it. Maybe they are your Agent Orange. I don't know.
What, when they all descend on me, just beat me to a bloody pulp?
Maybe I just need to give you the Double Dodge Twitter account and you can just do the fucking work for us. It's been a while since we've like alienated people. Yeah. We've tried to play it straight down the line and be good, but I don't know. I feel you have real potential on Twitter.
Everyone loves a bit of controversy.
Oh, they do. They fucking do. But I mean, the other thing is, it's like, you know, how many people have actually played enough farmers to work this shit out yet?
Yeah, well, that's true. I mean, we had like a WTC practice round because there were enough of us from the England. There's three England teams going, so we had like a practice round where a couple of the team captains went through, they did the matchups, and we just played the games out for a bit of warm-up for Nats. And I was paired off against Dan Harwood, and he was using the farmers, and I was using the engineers. And my God, does Windle hit like a fucking brick shit house. Like, oh my God. I was expecting it, but I was also not expecting Windle with three influence to be able to one turn the Lister. I was just like, what, like from full health, I was like, what just happened?
Jesus. I
legitimately just had no idea. But, you know, so if he gets snack time up and, or big breakfast or whatever it is, and is engaged by Grange, and you've got Honest Labor up and Harrow tools him up, he just goes in at tack, I don't know, 3,000 or something. Mm. With plus two damage, and is like, just kind of eat your face off now with six attacks. Like,
yeah,
what the?
It's gross. It's gross.
That's not just legitimately wrong. Yeah. Thresh is the best captain, though. Like, that guy's a beast.
No question.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, you got to hand it to Botsy. Like, when he goes in hard on something, he goes in hard. But I've also played into his Thresher and seen it firsthand, so.
Thresh is so good.
Yeah, he's fucking legit. Like that 3-inch melee, what is going on?
Yeah, I mean, no reprisal melee is fucking brutal. I mean, what, you got only one model, Locust can drag him in, and that's about it. Like everyone else is just fucked, or mallet. Well, not even mallet, because, you know, obviously activation.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's brutal. It's just fucking brutal.
Mm. Yeah, because I think with mallet, I mean, the interesting thing with the extended reach rule is only two models have it. And mallet, I mean, you kind of feel like it's okay on mallet because he's a 4-6 model in terms of movement. When you put it on a 5-8 model that's got the ability to dodge, like, what?
And can carry five and influence, and can eat a harvest marker to do a heap of damage as well, 3 damage on top of it.
Yeah.
The output's insane.
Yeah, and then his legendary to obviously get the extra attack on it with Life Drinker, so he just doesn't die in the second round. Like, no. Yep. No, not okay. But I'm really keen to give the blacksmiths a crack. They're looking quite interesting as a guild. I think that's gonna be a lot of fun. But we'll have to see what the other six are, I guess. So
yeah, the blacksmiths do look interesting. Do you think the no mascot is a bit of a buff, or given that often, you know, you can't spread all the influence around, it won't make a huge difference?
I mean, with the six cards we've got, I think it's not that big a buff. I think when you look at it, you go, okay, you don't have a player that is just purely a support piece or can do some other bits and pieces. You've got six players on the pitch, but all of the apprentices are really squishy.
Mm.
Like, really squishy. But you also then don't have any models on the pitch that only give up one VP. So you've got 50% of your models that are very squishy and easy to take out, and all of them are worth two. That, I think, counteracts it in a really interesting way. You've got this pseudo advantage of not having essentially a dead player, like a dead activation that you can use to get activation orders you want, but and you've got that increased effectiveness. But at the same time, like you pay off for that by having three models that are relatively easy to take out because they're all like 12 to 14 damage. And I think, well, the three we've seen. And I think the only one, what's the giant suit of armor's name?
Iron.
Yeah, he's got tough hide, right?
He's tough hired. 14 boxes.
Yeah, so he's not going to be easy to take out, but I think if you focus on him, he won't be too hard to take out. I mean, one tooled up player with you know, we'll still get the job done.
Yeah, tooled up, knocked down, and you're getting extra dice, and it just
exactly. Yeah, someone like Gutter will probably still get through that if you can tool her up or do something similar, like get butchery on them, do whatever you need to do to make that happen. Just with anatomical as well, it just starts to shred it. But
definitely look interesting.
Yeah, and I think in the right hands, I mean, it depends what the other six players are. I mean, I actually don't see myself putting Iron down on the table too often. I think he'd be a bit of fun, but I think all of his abilities probably come into play. Probably, like, you know, 2+ shots on goal. Yeah, okay, it's nice, but like, are you ever going to take that shot? Like, what's the impetus for improving your odds that far?
No, I think you take him for the just the ridiculous threat range. You know, if you're doing him plus ferrite with the legendary or you know, the extra movement bonus, and it's just like that missile kind of shot at goal, you know, first turn or top of two or something like that, but then it's still a 4-2 trade-off at that point, and 4-2 and you've given them the ball, so it's potentially a 4-6 trade.
Exactly. So, you know, if he's going to be anything, it's probably like a turn three once you've got a few takeouts with the rest of your team and you're actually putting yourself in a commanding position. But yeah, no, I can see a lot of, well, from the six players, I can see that, depends what the other six are, but, you know, could be very interesting, and something worth a good look at.
Did you get a chance to look at the farmer's box over the course of the weekend? Because I know they were there at early release for British
Knights,
weren't they? What did you think of the plastics? How did they look up close?
They actually look really good. I mean, it's hard to see because the plastic is, and the PVC is, I guess, a bit different to what everyone's used to, and because it's coloured, I think this is the main thing that the photos don't really demonstrate very well, is we're all used to this very light grey in terms of plastics, or being able to see it in metal. And as soon as you've got that, the detail kind of pops a lot more on the bare model. But when you get it... And the brown is probably not the best for demonstrating how much detail there is on these models. They look really good. I mean, I've got a box sitting here now, but I think the only thing I don't like about them, if I'm 100% honest, is that they come attached to their bases.
You need to chat to Big Deno about that. He sleeps the shit out of me about complaining about that.
I mean, I get it from a production point of view. 100% get it from a production point of view. It makes a lot of sense. But I'm thinking in terms of when you I mean, a lot of people like to base their own models in their own ways. And as soon as you've got something that's already textured and not as well textured as, say, if you put your own sand and flocks and everything on it, or if you want to have resin bases, or if you want to do other things, you don't have the same scope you do with a slotter base. You just don't. It's not that they look bad. It's just that from the modeling perspective, it's not as free as it was when it was on a slotter base. And when you look at how, you know, Russ does the sculpts on these things, he sculpts them without bases, right? So my question would be is, you know, given the foot size and everything like that, how hard would it be to just have the bases in there separate? So if you want to replace them with your own slotter bases that you can buy anywhere else or do anything, how hard would it be for those plastics to just have a little one, like, you know, small pin that comes up?
Yeah.
So when you get it, you can put it together. So they're not so that you can play with them straight out of the box with no real assembly required. But if you do want to put them on a separate base, you can. And I just feel like that's a fairly simple solution that wouldn't actually cost them any more production-wise. And I understand why they've gone for the single piece base included. It's that the same attitude and the same sort of mindset they had with the kickoff box of, if you get this on Christmas Day, can you just take it out of the box and play with it? Or do you have to spend 4 hours putting the models together? And I think that's a really good way to approach the market, because a lot of people see the hobby aspect as a barrier to entry. So having that attitude is like good business sense. 100% agree with it. But I feel like there's maybe a little bit of middle ground, especially the way these things are cast and the way you do the 3D modeling and sculpting to get them there. You probably could get away with it, but yeah. I don't know.
I heard somewhere that like the models are attached. There's a plug that keeps them on the base. Maybe it's part of the molding, I'm not sure, but somebody on Twitter was saying they were fairly easy to cut off and then rebase if that's what you want to do. But again, I guess, right. You know, like, yeah, the convenience of having them attached is good. I'm not particularly handy with a scalpel. I have cut myself open on multiple occasions. Maybe it's idiot-proofing for people like me. I don't know.
They're searching for that holy grail of kind of the the board gamer, and pushing them across to being able to be a tabletop war gamer and finding that niche between the two. And you can see the products going towards that, where, yeah, it's that instant play, but it's also, yeah, removing that barrier of entry of, you know, the hobby side of it. So I can see both arguments. I mean, Dino's comment was just that. You can still cut them off and put them on a different base, you dickhead. I think he said something along those lines.
that's probably his exact words, right?
Like, yeah, I'm pretty sure it's close. We've got a guy at our club who's a hobbyer, and he actually won a kickoff set locally here, and he's basically, yeah, sliced them off and put him on his own bases because he just went, I want to actually you know, do the bases the way I want to do them. So it is possible, but I agree. It's the one thing that I just like to see them separate, and then you can make that call. So Steamforge, do it now.
Yeah, yeah, I'll have a chat with Matt.
Yeah, I think we've got to get Giblin onto this person. He seems to be the one most responsible for the things that we need to blame them for.
Yeah.
Giblin, apropos of nothing.
Those eyes.
Giblin's not responsible for shit.
Yeah,
not on the face of it, right? But you know that he is.
It's what he wants you to think.
He just bats those pretty, pretty eyes and things happen.
Yeah. It's always the
pretty eyes. Old Emerald
Eye. Just gets away with bullshit. Fucking Giblin. They did a good job on the stream, I thought. Like, I enjoyed their commentary. Yeah, that was really nice. Did a good job.
I enjoyed our chat on the stream more, though.
Yeah, well,
that was fantastic. I haven't, because
the two of, like, the events that I've been at where Steamforge have been streaming, I've been playing in. So I haven't actually seen, like, I can see the YouTube videos afterwards, but I don't get to see what happens in the chat, other than the fact that Giblin and Alex just start laughing like little schoolgirls, like, halfway through a conversation at some point, right?
I think you can jump on the Twitch. So if you jump on the Twitch, their Twitch stream, I'm not sure if this is always the case, but remember one of the last ones, they have the option to basically have the chat visible for the replay. So I think it's determined by them. But I remember one of them watching it back afterwards, and I watched it might have been one of the World Champ ones, but you could see the chat stream. So I think it's determined by whoever does the stream.
Right, fair enough.
Yeah,
it would be good to see those comments as well. Because I think it adds something else, right?
Well, there were a few people writing like, "Yeah, JJ's fucked now." You know.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Yeah, they were you were getting sledged, man.
Yeah, we shouted them down, though. It's all right.
I sledged you a little bit, not heaps.
I mean, I would be surprised if you weren't.
Well, I mean, it's our patriotic duty as Australians, I think, to
sledge each other. Yeah, well, just to sledge everyone, really.
Just to sledge, you know.
Yeah, no, it's all good.
Yeah, it's what we've built our brand on, and here we are.
Yeah. Screw you, America.
Yeah. are you pumped for Worlds? Like, play some more engineers, go to Worlds, you know, free trip to Chicago. Like, what's the thought process there?
I guess at the moment I'm focused on the WTC because that's in, what, 3 weeks, 3 or 4 weeks, over in Belgium. I think it's Belgium. I don't actually know where it is. I booked
the time off. Resort.
Yeah, it's huge, right? With all the Warmer Hordes guys there, I'm actually looking forward to catching up with the Aussie teams there. Like, haven't seen Gigantor in a while. Be good to catch up with him and stuff like that. So, I don't know who else is on the Aussie teams for Warmer Hordes, but anyway,
I'm not too sure there. Gigantor's got new legs, doesn't he? He's like half robot now. He's like,
bionic man or whatever it was. But I mean, that guy was big enough as it was. Last thing he needs is robot. But,
yeah, we saw him at CanCon back in January. He's a fucking monster.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Josh is a good mate of mine. Been playing games when I was living in Brisbane, playing a lot of games with him there as well. So, be good to catch up with them. But yeah, I actually haven't. Like, I travel just about every week for work, so it makes booking things somewhat difficult. So I don't know where I'm going to be in the lead up to Worlds and where I have to fly in from. So I'm currently trying to navigate where I'm going to be to make sure I can book flights. That's next on the to-do list.
Need to call up your cartel boss and tell him where the next shipment needs to go to.
That's right? Cool. Yeah, exactly. I mean, before Nats, I was in Switzerland, and so I had to, and I was at work there, so I had to take all my models on the Monday morning and all my stuff for the rest of the week, and then the following week, because obviously it finished on Sunday, I had to go back to work on Monday. So I took everything over to Zurich, and then on the Thursday night, flew from Zurich into Manchester, stayed there, did play some games on the Friday, did that, did everything else, quickly came back to London, did a load of laundry, and got straight back on a plane back to Zurich. And it's been a crazy couple of weeks, but it's all right.
Right.
Life of a drug mule. Absolutely.
You say mule, I say dealer, but whatever. So.
Hey, wherever you want to be on the pecking order, all right? Just don't get too big for your boots and you'll sell up.
The top, I mean, the trophies don't really weigh that much. You just load them up with drugs on the way. It's all good.
Nice.
Yeah. I'm going to get arrested next.
Yeah.
Tomorrow morning at the end, it's going to be interesting. Oh, that's all I'm going to say.
Cavity searches galore. Lucky you. Still not the worst commute you'll ever have in London, I imagine.
I'd be surprised. Heathrow is not a fun airport on a Monday morning, I'll tell you that.
Fucking shit show, that place. So, WTC Worlds, you sound like you're going to be flat out. We don't yet know who the American contender will be, so...
Wasn't Australian Nationals this weekend?
It's next weekend.
This weekend, yeah, coming up.
All right, you guys headed over?
Well, we certainly are.
Yep. Indeed, it's on.
But who's the favourite? Who's gonna take it?
Well, Cam took the last tournament. He took CanCon. But I reckon there's a few more blokes playing this time around, so we'll just have to see.
I reckon there's quite a few. I mean, there's a couple of the Kiwi guys fly over. We've played them. They're pretty good. And there's a couple of
Kiwi locals. Nationals. Let's just have two Aussies at Worlds, right? Let's just make sure that happens. Because everyone loves the amount of sledging that will occur if two Aussies make it to the grand final table, right? Like...
Oh, how good would that be? That would
be amazing.
You could get some real Ashes sledging in there, or cricket sledging. You invented the game, but you guys are just shit at it. Yeah.
Yep. Exactly. Nice. I think that's got to happen. And I think the really great thing with the Steamforge stream is, like, you're mic'd up the whole time so the commentators know what's going on.
Oh,
so I was, like, round one especially, I was just, trolling Jamie and Alex the whole time. I was just like, my opponent was like, what are you saying? I'm like, I'm speaking to the guys on the stream. He's like, what? I'm like, that's why we're mic'd up, right? And he's like, are you serious? And I'm sitting there going, hey, Jamie, just touch the inside of Alex's thigh for me. I just want to see him smile for once. And like, and I was just giving them crap the whole time. It was quite good. I enjoyed that.
Yeah. This is why we're beloved as a nation, I feel.
this right here.
And who wouldn't want, like, people touching them on the inside thigh? I mean, really.
Exactly. Look at you with those dreamy eyes and just get to work.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's on the bucket list, let's face it.
Yeah.
Nice one.
Is homoeroticism a reasonable place to kind of draw this all to a close? I don't know.
Only if Giblin's involved.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's looking good, man. I reckon he's like been working out, you know. I'm pretty sure there's been some body oil involved as well. Like, I heard a rumor that he oils himself up before every stream cast, just as a kind of psychological thing.
I can't comment on that.
Yeah. You know what that means? That means he was slippery when he was commentating Nats. That's...
Yep.
Will I edit this out? I don't even know.
I wouldn't. No. And if you do, I would send just that clip to Giblin by itself.
Right,
Just to let him know. Just send it to Matt Hart. Just send it to Matt Hart. He'll love it.
Are you aware of what your staff are doing?
This is the image
of oily emerald eyes.
Fucking oily man. I love it. All right, well, I think this is probably an appropriate place to hit the kill switch. Good luck. Good luck at the WTC. Good luck at Worlds. I'm sure you don't need it.
I do.
Man, it's all about luck. That's what we've just established. So
yeah, dumb luck. Just point click, roll dice, and just do it better than the other guy.
Yeah.
Boom. I mean, I did like at the end of the win, you did the old baseball bat flip, like you just hit a home run. Roll five dice. They're all five dices. Thank you very much. Walk away. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm good. It doesn't even matter anymore.
That was always going to happen. Yeah. That was brilliant.
It's that certainty. Yeah.
No, well done. Maybe we'll look at getting you back on if you want to or are able to after the WTC. I love the slight variation in the format and the tactics therein. So it'll be good to kind of get a bit of a recap there if you're interested.
Yeah, let me know. I'll be around for sure.
Awesome. Sweet. Awesome. Well, thank you for giving us your very scarce time and for working around, I guess, the time difficulties as well.
Not a problem.
It's good of you. And congratulations again. That's a great win.
Yeah, cheers. Thanks for having us on. It's been good.
Anytime.
Take it easy. And we're back. That was a really good chat. I'm a big fan of JJ. I've just discovered through that chat that he's actually not a sole Australian citizen. And I'm a little bit distressed by this, David. What do you feel on that?
I feel that if he were a member of the federal parliament, he'd probably have to resign his seat at this point.
Exactly where I was going with that. Yeah. We've got a lot of trouble here. But I actually think he would be a fine, upstanding citizen to actually stand in parliament. So, you know, he might just have to renege his British passport and citizenship.
I feel that given the amount of sledging that went on in that conversation, that is a particularly long bow to draw.
So, do we have anyone to say thanks to at the end of the episode?
Well, I've got somebody to say fuck you to. I noticed... Now, Campbell, I listen to other podcasts. I listen to all the podcasts I can because, you know what? I like to hear what people have to say. But you know what I don't like to hear, Campbell? I don't like to hear our fucking assets being stolen by certain people who will go unnamed, you know, for comedy value on their podcast. Like, what the fuck?
You know what the best bit about that is? Like, half the people listening, even more than half, have no fucking idea that they ripped us off. It's funny for them, and that's it, you know? And when you're laughing in a room on your own, I mean, are you really laughing? Is it that funny at that point? Is it just sad, your existence at that point?
Yeah. So anyway, I mean, I'm not going to name any names, but I think, you know, they were the 9th best Gilmore podcast. I reckon they've dropped to 10th, maybe 11th.
And on that, if you are looking to support we'll just put it as greater or a lower number than 9th best. If you want to support our endeavours to just sledge people and talk all things Gilball, we do have a Patreon account. So if you go to patreon.com/doubledodge, you can sign up. We've had a bunch more sign-ups, which is awesome. It helps us basically initially, we make a loss because we send out a whole bunch of shit to you because we're awesome blokes. But it helps us get to tournaments, pay for things like website hosting and all the fun stuff. So this time, and if I miss anyone, send me a rude fucking email and say I'm shit. We've had a few people sign up. We've had a good mate of ours, Timmy Wyatt, has opted into the choo-choo motherfucker level, which puts him at legend status. So well done, Timmy.
Thank you, Timmy.
We're seeing him this weekend. Yeah, yeah, you've wasted your fucking money, but well done. We have, who else? Scott B. He's gone for the high fish positive. Once again, absolute waste of money, along with Max Beck and Alex White. Now, we do, Alex actually dialed it up to the choo-choo motherfucker of $10 a month. Now, that's pretty impressive, because that's like, what, 2.5 coffees, something like that? I don't know what a coffee kind of inflation rate is. But, you know, it, in all seriousness, it does help us out, and we really appreciate it. We do it for the love, and this just kind of enables us to kind of keep it going, really.
It does. Yeah, it does. And thank you very much.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Big shout out to our good mate Big Daz as well.
Legend. Darryl. He dropped off my ducks yesterday, and I'm so fucking excited by this.
Very good. Nerdvana Games, SA.com. Hit him up.
Yes.
He will look after you.
He does. Well, those metal dice of his, they, I don't know, sometimes he just, yeah, and then he rages out. And the biggest thing that worries me about the metal dice is, like, if I copped a plastic dice in the eye, I'd probably be all right. Those metal ones, that'll take your fucking eye out if he pings one at you. Yeah. So, you know what?
You know those dice sometimes land on their edge.
I've seen, yeah, we have to, I'll post a photo of that for the Patreon subscribers, so only you sweet people can see how the hell you get a six-sided dice to sit on its corner. He's done it twice, and we've taken photos.
Yeah, he's a warlock.
He's a legend. I love that guy.
All right, so I reckon that's about it. it's like loose as hell. So next stop, Nats.
It is. So we'll do a recap in a week and a bit, probably. The fact is that only one person can win, so either both of us will be crying or one of us will be crying. Either way, it's going to be awesome. I'm so pumped to go and get a shit ton of gaming done. There's about 4 different comps that Maddie's running. I think Aaron Hartwell's helping him out as well, so shout out to Aaron. And it's going to be good to catch up with a bunch of guys that we've been playing games with, so that's going to be awesome.
Yep, can't wait. So, good luck at Nats, Campbell.
You too, sir. I hope we don't have to play each other, unless it's the final.
Nights.
Oh, those fuckers.
Yep.